Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
The MLB season did start last night. Major League Baseball getting it away in Washington, and in keeping with the way that everything has gone with MLB over the past 9 months, things were pretty weird. Starting with the fact that Juan Soto, one of the stars of the Nationals' postseason run last year, was unavailable due to receiving positive test results earlier in the day. Now, when that news broke yesterday, I mentioned a pro athlete, even a star pro athlete, testing positive for COVID should not be a surprise to anybody, because this is what happens when you're playing baseball during a global pandemic. Aroldis Chapman was already out for the Yankees with a positive test. And then on top of that, two Nationals players, Ryan Zimmerman and Joe Ross, opted out of playing this season because of health-related concerns. And then you had the fact that the game, the first home game for the champs, the Nationals, was being played in an empty stadium. We all knew that was going to be the case, but it still felt weird as hell when it happened. Just like it felt kind of weird when Giancarlo Stanton did this in the first inning with Aaron Judge on base.
It'll be a 1-1 to Stanton. And the pitch is swung on and hit high in the air to left center. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. Away back in the left center field seats. A Stantonian home run. Giancarlo, no si può stopparlo. Oh, what a shot by Stanton. It's a two-run dinger, and the Yankees immediately take a 2-0 lead.
Credit Yankees radio. He absolutely smoked that pitch from Max Scherzer. And then with no fans around, the home run just kind of sat up there in the bleachers for a bit. It was also pretty weird in the bottom of the first when Adam Eaton did this off of Gerrit Cole to a smattering of applause.
Guy that was coaching in high school 5 years ago. How do you deal with Cole? It's a long one out to right, and Adam Eaton gets the champs on the board.
Kind of weird, right? Kind of like it was surreal to see Judge driving Tyler Wade and hear nothing but a couple of players cheering.
In the left, and another base hit for Aaron Judge, making him 2-for-2 to start tonight. Now they're going to try it with Wade, who's got great speed, and he will score without a play. The Yankees take a 3-1 lead.
Baseball's weird in an empty stadium. You know what I mean? Like, when you see the UFC, that's one thing. When you see basketball, at least we've seen basketball courts that are empty, like summer league games. A Major League Baseball stadium, though, empty is really bizarre. But of course, this being baseball, and baseball in 2020, you knew something had to go wrong. I mean, weird is one thing, wrong is another. You knew something would go wrong on opening day, and it did. Because in the top of the sixth, that game went into a rain delay, and you knew the moment that they went into that rain delay, there was no way they were going to finish that game. Not a chance. Not after this offseason. So they played for an hour and 43 minutes. They waited an hour and 58 minutes, and then they called it. So it goes into the books as a 4-1 win for the Yankees and a complete game for Cole in his debut. Let's not overlook the fact that while Scherzer gave up four runs, he did strike out 11 in 5 1/3. In other words, there are a bunch of things to talk about coming out of that game. Cole looking electric, Stanton coming out hot, the atmosphere of the empty stadium, and I could go on. However, for some reason, the only thing that most people are talking about from last night's game was not even part of the game. The thing that most people are talking about took place before the game. And this is why I am different, and this is why I am better. Of course, I am referring to the first pitch, which was thrown out by Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, and a well-known Nationals fan. Let me play the entire introduction of Dr. Fauci and then the pitch, just so you ghouls have some perspective.
In honor of the service and sacrifice of healthcare workers across the country, and in memory of all those who have lost their lives during the COVID-19 pandemic, we welcome Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, to throw out the ceremonial first pitch. Catching his pitch is Nationals pitcher Sean Doolittle. Dr. Fauci, when you're ready, it's your pitch. Dr. Anthony Fauci.
Now, the hack thing to do right here would be just to sit back and play a reel of terrible first pitches and then ask, where do you place that one? And just flat out clown the guy. Is it ahead of the mayor of Cincinnati and behind Mariah Carey? Or does it go straight to the top? Let me tell you. I'll tell you where it goes. I'll tell you where it goes on that list of all-time worst first pitches. Nowhere. It's not on the list. Yeah, you're right. That was not the best first pitch ever. Somehow this man of science defied all of the laws of science and threw it from in front of the mound over to the first baseline. I don't know what the hell that was, or how the hell that got there, or how the hell it got closer to the dugout than to home plate. And no, that really was not awesome. But you know what? I love it. I love it. I was pumped to see that he could not find the plate. Because my guy, he's got much bigger things to be working on. We're in the middle of a global pandemic. The number of COVID cases have doubled in the past 6 weeks. I'm glad that this guy threw a terrible first pitch. I'm fired up that it was hideous and it looked like he'd never seen a baseball and had no idea how far 60 feet was. Because we're in a pandemic. The last thing I want is the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases touching 90 on the gun and painting the outside corner. I definitely do not want to hear about this guy going to Nationals Park every single day with the team to build up his arm and work on his location and his command. Yeah, so the guy didn't hit 79 on the gun. He's 79 years old. He's been leading the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases since 1984. He's been involved in the battle against HIV, AIDS, SARS, Ebola, COVID, and more. So, if you didn't like this guy's delivery, or the fact that he didn't come within 20 feet of his catcher, even though he was standing 10 feet in front of the mound, man, I'm sorry. That's a you problem. That is not a Dr. Fauci problem. My guy's got much bigger things to worry about. He threw that terrible first pitch, and then he went right back to saving lives. What the hell would you do, other than mock him for allegedly making a mockery of the game? A lot of you dopes doing that need to look in the mirror right now, because while this guy's trying to save lives, you're busy making a mockery of your own. Man, get off this guy. You'd have to be a hack. Consider yourself a hack if you're lining this guy up with all the other horrible first pitches and go, hey, where do you rank this one? Really original. Keep trying, weaklings. Jason Lockenfora, JLC. It has been a minute or two since we last spoke. JLC, how are you and your family doing? How is your life right now?
We're doing well, Jim. I can't come close to complaining. We've been pretty lucky, by and large, in terms of the virus. And, you know, we're as happy and healthy as can be. So we've been very lucky, and hope you guys are doing well also. And just saying our prayers for those who aren't, because obviously this country is in bad shape in a lot of ways right now.
I would agree with you. I could not say that any better. Things are pretty good here, Jason, but you're right about everything else. So the NBA, Jason, is scrimmaging in the bubble. Major League Baseball started last night. And this past weekend, you've got numerous NFL players tweeting about wanting to play, but they were concerned about COVID issues. Bring us up to date. Where do things stand right now between the players and the owners?
Yeah, I mean, look, by and large, I have to tip my hat to the owners, the league office, the players, and the NFLPA, because this hasn't been as acrimonious, not even close to as acrimonious as the baseball negotiations got. And I think this is most like baseball, because to your point, Jim, about, you know, Orlando and bubbles, there is no real, you know, it's not a hard and fast bubble in baseball, and certainly football's plans. It would be almost impossible to have a bubble with the number of people required to get through an average NFL practice day, let alone game day. But obviously they're not, you know, going the bubble route either. There's still a lot of economic issues to be resolved. They've come very far on the health and safety side, and it's always money at the end. I mean, we're talking about billions of dollars in projected revenue, and now billions of dollars less in projected revenue because of the impact of COVID-19 and no fans or minimal fans, et cetera. I feel like I've always felt like they'll find a way to get this done. These are elite athletes, ultra competitors who want to compete and these are billionaires who want to make money, and they'll find a way to find enough common ground to get this thing off the ground. I guess the $25 billion question is, how long can they keep it afloat?
Right.
Can they get through a four-month regular season and another 5-6 weeks of playoffs? Is that going to prove to be feasible, or are we looking at an interrupted season, which that's been the way it's gone with COVID and every other sports league to this point?
So, I mean, Jason Lockenfort, my guest, is there any way JLC to even speculate, like given your conversations with general managers, how likely is it that the season will start on time and that every team will play every game?
I don't even know how you put a number on it, you know, a percentage or how you label it. It looks tough. I mean, I've talked to some GMs who figure you could get 12 games in and maybe a truncated playoff. I've talked to others who, you know, we're in a conversation and he's like, when the season starts, and then like a 3-second pregnant pause and if the season starts. I mean, everyone sort of does their own mental calculus on this, right? And you look at what's going on in your own community and then what's going on in some of these other communities around the country where they do play NFL football. And it's hard to project an hour or a day into the future, but you start thinking, well, if those numbers don't change, and then you start thinking about, well, man, pretty soon we're going to have a couple hundred people in this building and we're going to be getting tested for 2 weeks every single day. And we're going to be able to jump to the head of the line and get our results within 18 to 24 hours. But at that hospital down the road, there's no ICU beds, and there's not enough ventilators. And people in Arizona are waiting in line for 3 hours in their cars in the desert heat in the summer to try to get tested. You know, it's that kind of stuff, Jim, when you start projecting the health side of it. And then, you know, the number of people, again, the human capital it takes to have an NFL practice, let alone an NFL game. What are the odds that without a bubble that it doesn't start becoming a roster issue? So you look at the health and safety of the teams themselves and the coaches and the ancillary employees. You look at the health and safety in those communities. You look at the efficacy of testing. And you look at it from an economic, moral and ethical standpoint. And then you look at it from a resources and medical resources standpoint. And will there be a point or multiple points where it just becomes not the thing to do in multiple NFL cities?
See, that's the thing. You lay it out like that, and you see that it's a Herculean task, and then you ask yourself, is it even the right thing to do? Jason Lockenfort is my guest. You know, aside from that, you know, you have this really interesting piece, JLC, up on CBSSports.com about the Patrick Mahomes contract and Dak Prescott's contract situation. You know, when you consider that the league has not even begun to scratch the surface on gambling revenue,
yep.
What do you think teams around the league thought when they saw Mahomes sign that contract? In other words, were they upset or maybe were they happy?
No, I think there was a lot of virtual high-fiving going on, a lot of smiles conveyed from one salary cap manager of a team over Zoom to the general manager. If the norm becomes players signing away 12 years of their career for present-day dollars in a pandemic before we even get into this new CBA, which is 10 years of labor peace, and before we even get into the new broadcast deals, which are going to be massive, and before we even get to a point where there is a vaccine for this thing, and before we even get back to a point where there's people in stadiums again, if he's willing to sign away 12 years now for rolling injury guarantees and $63 million over the first 3 years, if the Ravens could, and they can't because they can't negotiate with Lamar until after the season, but if they could put that contract in front of Lamar and his mom right now, I guarantee you they would. The scenario that keeps people up at night is, you know, if the Kirk Cousins situation, which to this point has been an anomaly, starts becoming a little more the norm, and Dak Prescott's about halfway home to making that happen. And Dak Prescott, when he gets tagged again next year, that's 70 for two. Again, Mahomes is 63 for three. By the time we get to 2022, if Dak's on the open market, I got news for you. He's going to be making more than 42 a year. It might be closer to 45, depending on how robust the NFL's financial state is. And again, we're probably out of the down caps from COVID by that point. So let's just be conservative and say, you know, it's 42. It's $112 million in the next 3 years. Again, Mahomes is 63. I don't think we'll see another contract like Mahomes for a superstar caliber player probably ever again. But I do think at some point we're going to see other quarterbacks go the Cousins route, and Dak very well maybe the next.
Jason, locking for him, I guess, for a few more moments. So, JLC, just to finish that thought, why do you think that Mahomes did agree to that deal when he did, before the gambling revenue and in the middle of a pandemic and so on and so on? Why?
Well, everything I heard at the time was he was just sort of the idea of the 450 or the 500, that's where his head was at. The gross numbers, like, you promised me that much money, and even if I look underpaid, you know, for 9 of the next 12 years, I can live with that. And he's going to make a ton off the field. He went out of his way to be super team friendly again in those first 3 years where he's making hardly any. I mean, okay, $63 million is a lot of money. But 3 years for the best quarterback on the planet to earn $63 million is a long time by any metric of quarterback contract value. So he's allowing them to keep Jones and keep, really, they got no excuse not to keep anybody the next few years. So he wanted to be team friendly in that regard. And I was told that he wanted it to be done, that he didn't want it hanging over him or the organization anymore. You know, he 450 and then 503 with incentives. That's cool. I'll take it. But the structure and the, what he has to do to get there, I don't see anybody else taking it.
Jason Lockin for him, my guest. JLC, one last thought. What about the Washington football team? What do you make of the Washington football team calling itself the Washington football team this season?
You know, I think, look, there's so much going on with the Washington football team right now. I mean, this is happening in almost August. The season's about to kick off. They've got to reshape their organization. They're making hires and letting people go because of the Washington Post investigation into their culture of sexual harassment and how women were treated in that building who were employees and also non-employees who just wanted to cover the football team. They didn't do this of their own volition 3 months ago, right, and do all their marketing research and have all the time in the world to do it. This was foisted upon them when Nike and FedEx said, we don't want your money anymore, and we're not going to sell your jerseys anymore. So it's been a wild scramble, and they're firing personnel guys. They're hiring a new communication staff. They got to hire a new play-by-play guy. You know, they have Julie Donaldson in there now overseeing. They have a new head of media. She's got to hire web people. I mean, and 40% of the ownership group, Jim, wants to get the hell out of there. So the idea that they were going to do this nickname in a matter of weeks and get the new logos done and start printing those T-shirts and jerseys, I think was always a bridge too far. So this is what they have to do to get them to 2021. So be it.
All right, so we're about 7 months into one of the strangest, weirdest, toughest, most relentless calendar years anybody could ever remember. No one needs me to reset how whack and brutal 2020 has been since the ball dropped in Times Square back on the 1st of January. But for all the things this bizarre trip around the sun will get written down for in the history books around here, one man continues to make almost every single headline.
Bruh.
For the vast majority of this listening audience, I don't need to tell you who Silk Bra in Huntington Beach is. But if for some reason you've never heard that name, then you should know Silk is a legendary staple caller to this program going back with me all the way to the mid-90s. Given my appreciation, my affinity for history, loyalty, and audience interaction, you could consider Silk a made man in this here jungle. Because not only has he had this show's back for damn near three decades, he is also a smack-off champ, a jungle brand ambassador. I'm not good with Silk. I'm great with Silk. But many of you are not. Most of you are not. And that's because he checks every box on the Hater's Guide to Hating. Quick rundown. Frequent caller who gets a lot of airtime. Check. Smack-off champ, who all deem extremely undeserving of the title. Check. Represents SoCal in an arrogant and condescending manner. Check. Constantly flaunts a wine and cheese poolside lifestyle. Check. But ever since 2020 began, Silk has gone next level with his unabashed routine. And what makes it especially annoying for the rest of you is that it's completely genuine and devoid of any self-awareness. Because back in March, when the country hit record highs with unemployment claims, Silk started a phone call by bragging on how much paper his wife was stacking during the pandemic. What's up, Ra? How are you and yours?
My wife is still working at 100%. Her business is actually, business she's in is up about 65%. So I'll let you guess what that is.
Yeah, I don't really care to. That went over horribly. Something about a dude flaunting his wife's newfound cash in the midst of a global pandemic, for some reason, did not sit very well with a lot of people. But then a week later, Silk really went heel with his world-famous Twitter narc job, in which he posted a photo of a couple of beach volleyball players and tagged the local police department demanding they, quote, come down and arrest these kooks. Now, that rat job might have lived exclusively on Twitter if not for Brad and Corona bringing it to the show the very next day.
Silk Bra in Huntington Beach took to Twitter to narc out four dudes playing beach volleyball. The dude added his local police department with the photo, and they responded as though they actually cared about this garbage. After that narking, Silk took a victory lap on the Petros and Money show, congratulating himself for keeping the town of Huntington Beach safe from people enjoying themselves outside. Silk, you need to chill out, brah. You're cracking, man. Narc.
Brah.
Narc.
Brah.
Narc.
Brah.
Narc, brah.
So from that point on, Silk Bra was no longer Silk Bra. He was Narc Bra and Rat Bra and Snitch Bra. And that rap was cemented for the rest of time a month later in May when Narc Bra went all concerned citizen bra and showed up at the Huntington Beach City Council to voice his displeasure with local restaurants asking to be allowed to seat customers outside.
Next speaker, please.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I've been here since 72, lived here my whole life. There's some people out there who don't even live here. I see in the proposal here from the two council members that it mentions strict rules and adherence to those rules, but who's going to enforce it? I also noticed that the example given was from Vilnius, Lithuania, and that's great. No disrespect to the Baltic republics, and my wife is Latvian descent, but we couldn't find an example west of the Mississippi. Whatever they did in Vilnius is going to be okay.
Hey, listen, you might hate Silk, but not as much as Silk hates that sample study from Lithuania. Pretty sure the Baltic republics are still in a coma after that verbal lashing from the bra. Now, complementing and supplementing his jungle act and his city council performances were a bunch of shirtless periscopes from the pool and the beach and the bar, which Cal in Vegas addressed at this year's Smack Off in June.
Silk's the king of lame scopes. Silk, do us all a favor. The next time you shoot a scope, put a shirt on. No one wants to open up their Twitter app to look at some old man's great chest hairs. Every scope is the same. You're falling down drunk and talking about stuff nobody cares about. I'm going to Rich's barbecue tonight. As soon as I get there, I'm slapping you. Then I'm going to shoot a scope of me whipping your ass.
So by now you should know a few things, right? Silk is having a massive year in the jungle. Everyone besides me hates him for it. Brad Cow, beach volleyball players, Lithuania, every listener on Twitter, pretty much everybody not named me hates this guy. Which brings me to yesterday. An emailer named Sean in Costa Mesa wrote in to bag the Dodgers and their stadium. Silk, who honks hard for the Dodgers, despite the fact that he lives so much closer to Anaheim than he does LA, was not going to take that. So he called up in the final segment in order to clap back. In case you missed it, that call started with an invitation to a tequila tasting.
As soon as this pandemic is over, bro, I know I've been digging your new tequila deal, bro. My wife is going to set up a high-end tasting for you at Javier's. That's one of her accounts, bro. She's already talked to Javi Jr. So, Alvy, this tequila tasting is going to be lit, bro.
It's lit!
Thanks, Alvy.
So you heard it right there at the end of the clip. Silk calls out my longtime engineer, the famous Alvin DeLauro, with a blatant setup for a sound drop. Alvy's a good guy. He plays along. Albeit begrudgingly, but he did play along. Now, later in that same call, and again, you're starting to hate this guy again because he's inviting me to a tasting and he's dropping his wife's name and Javier's name and Javier Jr. Like, he's doing what he does, and he's doing the things that make you hate him. He also talks about how great Dodger Stadium is, and again, petitions Alvey for a drop.
The Dodgers also haven't moved from their Alvey Ionic Stadium.
Ionic.
And why would they, brah? It's blue heaven on earth.
So you couldn't see it if you weren't working here, but you could see it if you were. And if you couldn't see it, you could sure as hell feel it. I did through the glass. Alvin was getting pissed. Because to Alvin, he felt like he was being treated like some dog and asked to sit and stand and shake and bark and roll over. The only thing missing was Silk saying, "Hey, Alvy, you want to go for a W-A-L-K?" But Silk was not done. Because Silk's signature sign-off is always that self-indulgent, back-and-forth routine with his own drop. But by then, Alvin had had enough.
Alvy, let's do this. Silk. Brah. Mayor.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
That's Alvin murdering Silk with a hammer after Silk had pushed Alvin past the limit. Now, I'll be honest, I didn't know the extent of Alvin's disdain. I mean, for him to hammer him like that was bad enough, but I didn't know the extent of that disdain. And so I asked him what the hell just happened.
It was too much. I like Silk, but I mean, come on, dude. I let the first two kind of fly, and then, you know, we do the bra thing at the end. I mean, then we're going to get every caller trying to do this stuff. But I like Silk, so I did it. And I did it again. And I was like, okay, one more and that's it. I think I put my foot down here. I think I'm good.
Understand this about Alvin. For him, that's about as vitriolic and as pissed and as direct and as confrontational as he has ever been. This dude is renowned for his agreeability, for how passive he is for most things. For him to slide over to the microphone, unsolicited, and eagerly explain his position, tells you everything you know that you need to know about how bent he was and how bag-like he felt that Silk was. So what happened in the final minutes of the final segment yesterday was missed by some of you, and there was no time for reaction from the jungle at large. But damn if it didn't carry the night. This went on almost all night. As an example, Yellow Weasel on Twitter. Hey, clones, my wife and I are bribing Jim with tequila to hang out with us. Hey, clones, watch me make Alvy my personal sound engineer. Boom! Alvy doesn't like that call. Haunted Horse tweets, Alvin, thanks for running that fake EP, Silk. Oh my God, your ego is getting out of control, Silk. Scrap Iron Liver. Silk is a douche. Hilarious when Alvin dropped him like a bad habit. Casey in New Hampshire, quote, I have been waiting for a long time for Alvin to crack down on that D-bag. Reginald Merriweather, quote, wore Alvin social distancing narc bra from the show.
Bra.
And then countless memes and GIFs of guys dunking and teabagging on other guys with the caption, Alvin versus Silk. Once again, you got to understand. You have to understand what we have here, because what you have here is a universally beloved, soft-spoken, non-confrontational, agreeable, cerebral, longtime staff member. And that guy absolutely curb-stomping a universally despised, unabashed, confrontational longtime caller. And the crowd unanimously loved it. And I want to make sure that we doubled back, since it happened so close to the end of the program yesterday that I know a lot of you missed it. Silk, being Silk, tweeted afterwards, and I quote, as always, Silk creates premium content, end quote. And you know what? He's not wrong. Add it all up. And through July 24th, this has been the year of the bra.
Bra.
Love him or hate him. And trust me, I do love this guy. But this has been his year. And you got to give credit to a dude who does not give a damn what you think about him. If anything, you're only fueling his fire. 2020, the year of the bra. As much as you and Alvin might hate it.
Alvy, let's do this. Silk, bruh, Mayor.
He had had enough. Rashawn Evans. Rashawn, you and I sat down and we spoke face to face on Radio Row back in Miami right before the Super Bowl, but a lot has changed in the world since then. So how are you and everybody around you doing in this most unusual time, Rashawn?
Man, everybody doing good, man. I've just been quarantining, staying out the way, trying to, you know, use this time to try to at least, you know, make the best out of it, though. But other than that, man, everything's been good.
All right, so not only that, but I know that in the offseason you got yourself a dog, and that dog's name is Batman. Yeah. Dude, I love this story. So, like, you'd been thinking about getting a dog for a while. Okay. What did it feel like to go about doing it, and what's life like with Batman so far?
No, I'm not going to lie. I mean, the life has been good. I will tell you this, though. When you get a dog, man, they like kids. I mean, sure. I mean, you get into a phase where the first phase is basically trying to get them to understand you can't pee and use the bathroom in the crib. But then once you get out of that, that normally gets a little better. But then it's a second phase where they get curious. They want to tear up stuff. So, you know, once you get out of those couple of phases, man, they definitely become really good dogs. But other than that, man, I've been enjoying them, man. Shoot. I'm really actually thinking about getting another one.
Dude, that is such a great explanation. They are kind of like kids in that regard. Wait till they learn how to play Fortnite, dude. Wait till they get that console and you can't get it out of their hands.
Exactly.
Wait till they start talking back to you, man. Like, so what kind of dog is Batman? And then what's the next one you're thinking about?
No, he's a cane corso. I'm actually getting another cane corso. But they call him an Italian Mastiff, though. But he is, you know, every bit of what you call a guard dog, man. I mean, he's already huge right now. He's only like 7 months. But, you know, he's very instinctive, very, very curious, very, you know, protective of his owner. Matter of fact, he's walking away from me now. Hey, get back over here. Come back. Get back.
Dude, how much does he weigh right now? Do you know?
Sure, he might weigh. He probably weighs close to 100 pounds right
now. Dude, that's a big dog.
Yeah, he's a big boy.
And he's still growing.
He's a big boy. He's still growing right now. I don't know when they stop growing. I'm thinking maybe probably around like age around 2. But, I mean, he's already on the path right now. He's a monster. He's like a little tank walking around the crib right now.
If you're stacking dogs like that, you're going to have to get a bigger crib. Now, you keep putting up numbers the way you are.
Absolutely, absolutely. But, you know, that's why I'm like, sure, I need to go score some more touchdowns, get some more INTs. And, you know, once I do that, I know for sure I'll be able to have a big enough crib then.
I love it. Rashawn Evans is joining us. All right, so training camps are getting ready to open up. How eager are you to get back on the field and get back to work and do your thing?
Yeah. I'm very eager, man. I mean, just the fact that I've been, you know, this has been longer than usual, just the fact that we done had all this time to kind of train and get ready for the season. But, you know, other than that, I feel like it's some pros that I done got from it, just the fact that I had more time to heal, more time to kind of just, you know, do other things outside of football. But, you know, I'm definitely eager to get back, see some of those same old faces that, you know, I didn't see since, you know, the AFC Championship game, but and then too some new faces. So, I mean, I'm kind of eager to get back and go on and get ready.
Rashawn,
you know, for another season.
Right, Rashawn Evans, my guest. I was going to say, like, there's some benefits to it. You're right, you can heal up some nicks. But at the same time, do you have any questions or concerns about safety as it relates to COVID during camp?
Oh, I do. I mean, just the simple fact, you know, not even just for me, even though, you know, I don't have kids or nothing like that. You know, I know there are some of my buddies and friends that do play ball. They got kids, they got, you know, wives and family or older people that stay with them. You know, the question is whether or not, you know, going and having a full season that we're going to have is going to be the best, you know, situation for us and our own health. So, you know, even for myself, I even think about, you know, having my mother and my pops who come to my crib every now and then, you know, infecting them. It's something that, you know, it goes through my mind each and every time I go over to the facility. So, but other than that, man, I feel like, you know, hopefully the NFL, they got a good protocol for us to go back and be able to, you know, test each and every day so we can know whether or not we got it. And then, too, just with the quarantine, knowing that we've got 2 weeks and having to, you know, have negative results, you know, 2 times in order to come back. So from what I've heard, they sound like they got it under control. But other than that, man, I still am kind of worried. But, you know, hopefully they got that stuff under control where, you know, there's not a lot of people that get affected.
I appreciate your thoughts on that. Titans linebacker Rashawn Evans is my guest. Now, when you and I spoke in Miami, we talked about that run to the AFC Championship game. But if you take me back a little bit further, at one point, the team was 2-4, and you were able to completely turn that thing around. You had been a part of a couple of national championship teams at Alabama, but you said last year was one of the most special seasons that you'd ever been a part of. Why was that? What made last year so special?
No, I think just like you said, the fact we came from 2-4, everybody was kind of counting us out. It was like, well, sure. You know, these guys have been had the trend of having a pretty much a mediocre season. And basically, they'll get to the playoffs and they'll never make it past the first round. And we were able to do something totally different from what they was expecting. And then, too, the simple fact that, you know, guys, you know, in the locker room, we wouldn't point fingers. I mean, everybody pretty much held themselves accountable. So, I mean, when you got that type of locker room, it just makes it more fun. You know, you got room in the locker room that, you know, take up for whatever it is, mistakes that they had during the season and are able to change it and, you know, use it to our advantage. You know, some of the things that we were doing good later on in the season. That's what we did. We were able to make it to the AFC Championship and prove a lot of people wrong. I feel like even still now, people still kind of doubt us. Just the simple fact of, you know, the market we in and to, you know, just from our own history. But at the same time, man, that's the reason why we play the game. Simple fact to prove people wrong. So I'm excited.
Rashawn Evans, my guest. You know, the thing is, it's kind of, I know exactly what you're saying. It might be the market, it might be your history, but the fact is, part of that run was beating the Patriots, but not just beating the Patriots, but shutting them down and physically dominating them in their house. When you do that to them, and then a week later, you do it to the Ravens, do you feel like that you made a statement to the entire league that this is who this team is and this is who we're about, what we're about?
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. You would think that would be the case, but you know, you got to do something that's never been done before in order to kind of win those type of people over. You know, regardless if we ever do or not, it really doesn't matter to me nor to some of the guys that's in the locker room. We really don't care. But you know, I do feel like too, for me, you know, doing something that's never been done in an organization, that which is winning the Super Bowl, is something that's on my goal list. So I mean, for right now to have the opportunity and to go through the journey again this season, to be able to have the opportunity, it sounded really promising to me, man. So, you know, I'm not the type of guy to go and say, yeah, we're going to win the Super Bowl, we're going to do this, but I am the type of guy to say that we do what we need to do. There's definitely a high chance of doing that.
So when you're talking about the Super Bowl, I know you're talking about team goals, and I know you're focused on team goals. From the outside, though, It seemed like the next step for you, especially given those numbers last year, would be a Pro Bowl and an All-Pro selection. Right. Is it on your radar? Is that motivating you this offseason?
No, it's definitely on my radar. But, you know, at the same time, and I just try to be consistent and top every year from what I've done the past year. So, you know, regardless of whatever that stat sheet is or whatever that thing shows, man, I'm trying to double it, triple it, whatever the number may be, man, just so I can, you know, try to be legendary. I'm not just playing a game just to be mediocre. I'm not playing a game just to try to be, you know, a guy that say that he went to the league. I'm definitely trying to do some stuff, you know, so at some point I can wear that jacket. So that's where my head at.
I love that. One last thought. So in terms of doing that stuff, some of that stuff, and this kind of involves also putting on that jacket, is the intangible stuff, right? Like your growth. There's growth as a player, and then there's growth as a leader. Last month, I thought you had a really interesting quote when you talked about leadership, quote, something that has to be earned. I'm still pursuing the journey of being a guy that guys can count on. I keep myself to a high standard as it relates to that. So how do you go about pursuing or the pursuit of being a guy that other guys can count on? What's that mean? How do you do that?
I would just say, man, just from the past couple of years, man, for me, it was definitely showing guys and basically letting them know that I can come through in big moments, you know, when you need it. So, you know, during those phases, hey, come back here, boy. Come back. That's him doing. Hey, he
acted Batman, man.
Hey, come back over here.
Batman's doing Batman things, dude.
Yeah, that's bad. You know, Batman doing Batman stuff, man. Try to watch over everything. But no, man, just making sure that I, you know, really lead by example. You know, I feel like especially you coming in as a young guy, you got a grown-ass man that, you know, got plenty of money, have been in the league for years and years. You know, the number one thing or the last thing that they want to hear you talk about is you want to be a leader. So for me, it was just making sure that I basically prove what I do on the field, and everything else is going to handle itself, and it's been doing that lately. So continue to do those things, and also over time, being more vocal, being able to, you know, tell a guy if he's doing something wrong, being able to have that opportunity to do it, and being able to have something to back up it, you know, to be able to say something like that. It's one thing to tell somebody to do something, but if you're not doing it, it doesn't resonate. So, you know, I feel like I'm definitely on the path of doing that, man.
That locker room's got so many guys like that, too. I love that notion that the last thing that these grown-ass men with grown-ass contracts want to hear is some young guy saying, hey, man, I'm a leader. Yeah, I want to be a leader. They don't want that.
Exactly.
Rashawn, what's going to happen when, like, if you get that other dog, when Batman is already there, and then all of a sudden some young pup shows up, and it's Robin, right? And if Robin's acting like he's the man, you know Batman's not going to like that. And then Robin's going to ultimately get big and strong and want to roll and fight with Batman. Dude, that's going to be a crazy dynamic, right?
You know what's so crazy? I've had two dogs like that. I had two mixed breeds. I had a pit bull mixed with a Labrador Retriever. Both of them. One was named Buddy. Wow. One was named Smokey. And I remember one time I had a get-together, and they both almost tried to eat each other up. And what was so crazy, after they did it, they literally was sitting right next to each other, licking on each other, licking each other's wounds right after the fight. So from what I've learned from that fight was really more on being able to teach those two males how to be able to play with each other and when to stop whenever you're doing certain things like that. Because for what I've heard, you know, there's definitely going to be a pecking order when it comes to two males. I mean, both of them got balls. I mean, you know, excuse my language, but, you know, these guys, they walk around here, this is their territory. They want to be able to be the one that's the alpha.
I was going to say, they're alphas.
Walking around here.
That's what I was going to say, right?
That's just nature in itself, so. I mean, even with the younger one, at some point, I mean, he's going to be able to kind of challenge Batman at some point. But then, you know, you got to get it to the point where you let them know that you can't do those certain things, especially when I'm not here. And two, if I got to separate them when I'm not here, and sometimes I'll just do that. But, you know, I feel like, too, you got a good training plan with these guys, especially with these smart dogs, they'll be able to have.
Well, dude, they got to take care of each other and not go at each other. You know, and the thing about Robin, man. Robin, he's just yapping, man. He never shuts up. Like, he'll never take Batman. Batman will kick his ass every single day of the week.
You know what's so crazy? I'm not even thinking about naming him Robin. Naming him Bane.
Yeah. Bane, right?
I'm actually thinking about naming him Bane.
He wouldn't. I bet that dog and that breed, he ain't going to even take a name like Robin, right? He's not going to accept that.
No. He's not even. That's too small for him. When you think about Robin, you think about, you know, the little butler next to you know, Batman. What was his name? I forgot the
Alfred.
Guy's name.
The guy. Alfred, the old guy?
Yeah, Alfred. You think about that. Yeah, that's what you think of. But these two powerful animals that both can hold their own weight. I mean, sure, you got to have a name just to be able to match that.
You have to, and they know it too. Rashawn Evans, my guest. He was the 22nd pick overall in 2018. Man, I hope we see you soon. I hope we see football soon. Rashawn, good to see you for in person. Good to have you on the show. I will take you anytime. Good luck finding Bane. And once you do, let's come back on and talk about it.
Oh, absolutely, man. I appreciate you having me on again.
Alvy, do we have time? Roll you. Roll you. Yeah. Welcome to the jungle. It feels amazing to be back. What's cracking? Welcome to the program. My name is Jim Rome. All right, so I took 2 weeks off. I am back. I'm glad to be here. Now, where do you start? That's always kind of a curious question. When you take off 2 weeks, where do you pick up? Here's the hard truth. The NFL season may actually be impacted by COVID. Mark Davis, quote, I don't even know if it's safe to play.
Big
Mark
deal.
Davis is the voice of reason. Tells you just how jacked up this world is right now. Charles Robinson.
What's up, brother? How was whiskey?
Oh, dude, so fun.
The NFL and NFLPA negotiations sputtering along like Jim Rome's AmeriCorps as it crossed 15,000 miles. The white smoke is coming.
People to yell at me that our lights are too bright and that we need window coverings. Man, you're missing a good show inside, yo. What'd I just tell you? I eat a lot, I drink a lot, and I sex a lot on vacation.
Yo.
Why do you want window coverings?
Fill-in days where you kind of get a little complacent, if you will.
How do you just admit to me that you don't go 100% when I'm not here?
I don't know.
I saw that playing out differently in my mind.
Hey, man, I probably shouldn't admit this, but like when you're gone, the cats will play. Ben Colver, my guest.
But if there's some sort of like a party bus with like 40 guys coming in with techno music playing from downtown Orlando, I feel like I might actually have to call that line at some point.
Susie in Wisconsin.
I asked him if he was familiar with your show. Oh, yeah, the Rubadonga guy.
Donga.
Not exactly, Donga. But Donga. Good grief.
Dustin Poirier is my guest.
When I can come home and just be dad, I don't have to be the diamond. I don't have to be the tough guy, the cage fighter. I can just be dad. We can watch cartoons and I can play Barbie. Be a father to a little girl.
Society is decaying.
Bruh.
Let the man stream.
Okay.
Let the people hear the man stream.
You a strip steak?
Because JR with a camera. Some of the most entertaining in a long, long time.
Braised beef short ribs day?
do not give us Chrysler bleep.
A Chrysler's.
Oh, come on, man. Lucky you. At least you got a blanket.
Look at the blanket, bro.
Look at his damn face, bro.
So I say if JR wants an El Chapo-like tunnel so he can eat at his favorite restaurant, start digging, Genie and Palenka.
Congrats nonetheless, Monty. And I guess if you want to lose weight, you just need elk to come in and take a run at you.
There's not a man in the world that can eat that much cast that can beat me.
Take a bow, Monty. Tim Connolly joining us. How did the fun run out of sports?
Oh, man, I could talk about that for an hour. Sports are starting to be run like corporations, and I don't think any of us got into it. I'm sure you didn't. You got into doing this because you love sports. You
That's
didn't
it.
Get into it
right.
to make a job. It's passion.
But Joe Madden at the helm is huge.
I'll tell you what I think. Mike, are you undercover? Or are you calling from a closet? Why do you talk like that?
What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think so, Kevin. I've got the athletic right here in front of me. You said snake. Oh, snake. Yeah, that was a compliment. Snakes eat rats, and everybody hates rats. Man, I'd give anything for a snake. You know why? They eat the freaking roaches. They're falling out of the ceiling into my office. So, Terry, how would you describe the mindset of your team right now?
It's typical Dame. He's very focused, very single-minded in his profession, and we've had great sex.
Uh-oh.
Success in the second half of the season.
We're talking to Matt Kenseth. What's up, man? You working on your car right now?
I sort of forgot about calling you, and I just got a reminder. Thankfully, I had my phone. And I'm actually out here lighting my big green egg, getting ready to smoke some Boston butts.
I want some butts!
Yeah!
Sing Logan! Rat Family Logs!
Great big community of friends you introduced me to.
That's where you, our brother up there across the bar and around the bend, War Randall.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Jerry in Cleveland.
I want the new car. One that won't get run. One that won't try to sell fly. I call a phone. Fat, fat, fat.
I'm sorry about that.
You saying I'm sorry about that is the equivalent of Logan Rome saying, my bad. You took my car and he wrapped it around a tree. Logan, how are you doing? My bad.
My bad.
If I put a coffee bean into that pot of boiling water we call prison, now you have to change the name of the water to coffee. Because he said the coffee bean had the power to change the entire atmosphere inside that pot. Go out there and go be a coffee bean.
We're talking to Chris Mannix.
Giant screens around the floor, eerily quiet at times, definitely different. But, you know, all signs are positive right now for the NBA in terms of being able to pull this off.
Alvy, let's do this. Silk, brah, mayor.
I was like, okay, one more and that's it.
He was getting out of hand.
I think I'm good.
You think?
Dr. Fauci, it's your pitch.
I'm just glad that he threw out a terrible first pitch because we're in a pandemic. The last thing I want from the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases is touching 90 on the gun and painting the outside corner.
Hey, I don't know who Breathy McBreathery, Dodger, Mark.
From Chile to Cerritos. You're welcome. But that's not why I called.
Rashawn Evans.
First phase is basically trying to get them to understand you can't pee and use the bathroom in the crib. Matter of fact, he's walking away from me now. Hey, get back over here.
I'm Batman.
Come back. Get back.
Where can I find a woman like that?
Blizzard that I had from Dairy Queen.
They use custard instead of ice cream. Mm.
Dude, happy opening day, my man, and I will talk to you soon, brother.
I want to hear from all you crackheads.
You guys shoot me an email. I'll be back whenever you want me.
Happy to have you back. Stay safe, all right, brother?
Then they get on the ground and hump each other.
Can I get a second rolling?
Wait,
please.
Bada bing, bada boom, you're done.
Boom, boom.
Both of them got balls.
Outro.
Good night now.
The legend, Alvin DeLauro, doing it again. All right, so I meant to get to this yesterday, but the LA Dodgers and Mookie Betts announced something big. In fact, very big. Here is the tweet from the team. The LA Dodgers announced that they have signed outfielder Mookie Betts to a 12-year contract through the 2032 season. Bam! A 12-year contract worth a reported $365 million. The largest extension in baseball history. It also includes a $65 signing bonus, which is also the largest in history. $65 million to pick up a pen and put your name on a piece of paper. How does that taste, Boston fans? Because recently it seemed like the Sox fans were starting to convince themselves that Betts was in fact going to come back to play for them. That he was just going to play out this season and then sign back with that team as a free agent. Yeah, not anymore, he's not. And by the way, never was. Boston had their chance to pay Betts, and they blew it. They had a chance to lock up one of the two best players in the game, and they passed. They had the 2018 AL MVP and a four-time Gold Glove winner in their clubhouse, and they had the chance to keep him there for the rest of his career. It was right there. Instead, they trade him in a salary dump, and now he's going to be a Dodger for more than a decade. You combine that new deal with the year remaining on his contract, his current contract, and the total comes to 13 years, 392 mil. An enormous number. And a massive deal from the Dodgers and a massive statement by the Dodgers. Because this is not just a matter of the Dodgers throwing around big money because they can, or big money because they're a big market team. In fact, it is the exact opposite of that. The Dodgers do not throw around big money. They let Manny Machado walk. They let Hyunjin Ryu walk. They let Yasmani Grandal walk. They don't do those big long-term contracts, at least not in a while. And they're in the middle of a league, or they're in the middle of the league in payroll. They built that team around drafting and developing young talent and not big free agency splashouts. Andrew Friedman, for instance, has never signed a player for more than 100 mil. So the fact that Friedman just went past 100, past 200, past 300, and nearly got to 400 mil in a pandemic says a hell of a lot about Betts. And the fact that they did it before he even played a regular season game for the Dodgers is huge. They watched Betts in spring training and in summer camp and felt they had seen enough to give him that deal. Actually, they saw way more than enough. One Dodger executive told Tom Verducci, quote, "He's everything you want. First of all, he's a great athlete and a gifted hitter. Watching him day to day, you appreciate what he can do. He has an extraordinary ability to track pitches and square them up, and he makes incredibly quick yes-no decisions on swings. He is an excellent defender with the ability over time to play four different positions and play them well. He works hard. He studies the game. He helps young hitters. He comes in with a positive attitude every day. He's been a joy to have around in every way. He's just so impressive." End quote. In other words, this is the guy they had been saving their money for. This is why they had not thrown crazy money at other free agents. Because it was not about signing a guy. It was about signing the guy. And for the Dodgers, Betts is the guy. They're saying that's the guy we want on our team for a decade. And that's the guy we want all of our young guys to model themselves after. Yes, it's a long contract. And it means they might be paying him big money in his late 30s, except long-term contracts are not about getting value in year 11 or year 12. They're about spreading out the payments so you're getting a guy locked up for his prime in your jersey. Betts, for his part, said his goal is one thing and one thing only.
Love being here, love just everything about here, and I'm super, super excited for what's coming. I'm here to win some rings, bring some rings back to LA, and that's all I'm focused on.
All right, so does signing Betts guarantee a ring? No, of course not. The only thing that guarantees a ring is winning four games in the World Series. Betts does not have to win a ring, though, in LA to justify the contract. That's always been a terrible take as well. The guy does not have to win a ring to justify that contract. Signing Betts to that deal doesn't guarantee a ring, but I'll tell you what it does do. It keeps giving them a look at that ring. And LA is doing what Boston would not do. Pay for a big-time talent and compete for a World Series right now. It's tough, Boston. Man, you lost TB12 and you lost Mookie Betts. And as my native Bostonian father used to say to me whenever something bad happened to me when I was a kid, "How's that grab you, Jimmy? How's that grab you?
Good night now!"